behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benson.
And I'm Ben Boland.
And we've got a topic that comes to us from Rudy Smith.
The famous Rudy Smith. For anyone who hasn't heard this name before, this is a frequent contributor to Car Stuff in terms of listener mail,
definitely.
Right?
Definitely. Lots of valuable suggestions. And today we're going to take one of Rudy's ideas and run with it for our topic today. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about, Japanese custom scooters, what he calls maxi scooters. And there's a good reason he calls them maxi scooters. We'll find out in a minute. But, in his email, Rudy said, just wanted to point these things out. You know, he didn't say this specifically, but he wanted to point these out because they're so unusual. And then he says, further amplifying the Japanese notion that if it can be customized, it will be customized. Also wants to note the lowrider aspect of these things. He wonders to know if they have like an air suspension to them, something like that, because they are extremely low riding scooters. Mm-hmm. We'll find out. If our listeners haven't looked at these yet, take a look online. We'll tell you where to go to find these, but they're really incredible designs. He also mentions that maxi scooters he thinks is a class of big, large displacement scooters, which can be purchased as factory bikes, but then they're customized into these kind of what he calls rakish cycles, almost like custom bikes, like a chopper design.
Right. Yeah. But when we say the word chopper, let's be careful not to confuse these or conflate them with motorcycles. These are not choppers like Harleys or something.
Exactly. And you know what? We'll tell people where to go later to check these out to see some good photos and things along the way, but they're pretty amazing. And you know, I dug into these just a little bit more than what Rudy sent, because he always sends a lot of links along with
a lot
this
of references,
stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of references. And he says, you know, check out these sites. You know, there's a site called Pink Tentacle, which has custom scooters from Japan. Pink Tentacle, if no one's ever gone there, or if you're unfamiliar with it, it sounds a little funny.
It's not the best name.
No, not I guess, but I guess the site's been dark, Ben, since 2011. They haven't been updating since 2011. However, there's a lot of good stored information there, and it's a Japanese blog site. Mm-hmm. So it's got a lot of Japanese culture. There's kind of art and design and science fiction. It has kind of this, kind of a retro feel to it.
Yeah, and you can also check out some YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. I mean, YouTube is lousy with excellent videos of Japanese scooters.
Yeah, these custom scooters. You have to remember the custom part, because if you don't say the custom part, because that's the difference. Let's say you're online and you're searching for maxi scooters.
Right.
Maxi scooters.
Mm-hmm.
Search for that, then search for custom Japanese maxi scooters, and you're going to see a dramatic difference in what you
find. Yeah, much more of a difference than you might expect. So another thing that's interesting here, I don't know, let's save some of the other quotes from Rudy's email for a little bit later.
Yeah.
Scott, if you're okay with it, I was thinking we could just do a little bit of history real quick.
Sure, let's do that, and then I'll tell him exactly what a maxi scooter is.
Perfect. Okay. So we know at first that a motor scooter, at its most basic definition, is similar to a kick scooter. It's got a seat, a floorboard, small or low wheels. In the U.S., we define a scooter as a motorcycle that has a platform for the feet versus, you know, versus the way that you would put down a footrest in a motorcycle
or a moped, I guess.
Moped
would be pedal driven, really.
Mm-hmm. And it's got a step through frame on most classic scooter designs. Now, Japan has a great history with scooters, but of course, Japan was not the first country to create scooters. The motopeds and the moped stuff, that goes back to the beginning of the 20th century.
Sure, and they're built out of necessity, right? They're built out of need. A lot of people were doing things like they would modify bicycles with small engines. That was really something that we saw a lot of early on in the 19th century. And then we also saw, I'm trying to think of when we saw the motorcycles that came along that were kind of an adaptation of that were stronger engines and the same thing. Was that, I would say, the 1920s, 1910s, maybe? We had the board racers that we talked about, and some of some of the cool knockoff type bikes that we talked about that are similar to those bikes.
Right.
And then I guess Then they started to move towards these scooter designs, which were a little more, I don't want to say classy, but maybe they were a little more classy. And they had body fairings that covered the engines and the important internal parts.
Right.
They
a little bit more stylish.
They were prettier, I guess.
Yeah, there was definitely an aesthetic. Now let's, since we are talking primarily about the Japanese custom scooters, when we look at scooters in Japan, then where we're really going to start is in the 40s, post-World War II. Mm-hmm. Interesting story. After World War II, a lot of aircraft manufacturers were forbidden from making aircraft parts, at least, and components. So they had to find something else to sell to stay in business. So a company named Fuji Sangyo, and let me go ahead as a caveat, Scott, on both of our behalves, and apologize to any of our Japanese speakers in the audience, because we are going to butcher some Japanese words.
Maybe just a few words.
Maybe just a few. Well, Fuji Sangyo, part of an aircraft company called Nakajima, they began producing something called the Fuji Rabbit S1. This was in June of 1946. It was, it was partially inspired, or if we're being honest, heavily inspired, wink, wink, by, some of the Powell scooters used by U.S. forces during the war. So it was designed to use surplus military parts, coming out of necessity again. So it had stuff like, the tail wheel of a bomber became the front wheel of the S1. And I've got stats on the S1. I don't know how far we want to go into this.
Well, Ben, you know, you said something that just reminded me. You said it was called the Rabbit. Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm stretching the extent of my memory here, Ben, but when we talked about Honda, the Honda Corporation and the foundation of Honda, wasn't his nickname Rabbit? Am I making that up, or is that something that that I remember from our podcast previous?
Oh, man. Yeah, yeah.
On now, Honda. I wonder if he was involved. I haven't looked at my notes to even remember this, but yeah. Now that I think about it, the start of the Honda Motor Corporation began with these modified bicycles and then mopeds, and then I don't know if they really got into scooter production, but mopeds engines led to motorcycle engines, which led to cars and et cetera, et cetera.
But that's a good question. We should
Rabbit, I wonder. I wonder if there's a tie-in there. There might be.
Mental note.
Yeah.
So the Rabbit has explosive sales, man. It's the first motor scooter manufactured in Japan. And it had competitors who come along, of course. It had the Mitsubishi Silver Pigeon. Most notably,
Silver Pigeon.
I know.
The Rabbit, the Silver Pigeon. These are kind of funny names.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, these sales were so successful that in 1948, the Emperor of Japan was presented with both a Silver Pigeon and a Rabbit.
No kidding. So now we know the Pope rides a Harley. The Emperor of Japan rides a pigeon and a rabbit.
Yeah, a silver pigeon.
Interesting.
That's important. Yeah. Oh, and in 1954, the Honda Juno came out.
The Honda Juno. Oh, that's right. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, we did talk about that one for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Now, these were, okay. Here's the thing. In case before somebody sends the email out to us, the history of the Japanese scooters can be a little bit murky because it was post-war. Mm-hmm. So when we say that the Rabbit was the first one manufactured in Japan, what we're really aiming for is the first production model manufactured in Japan. Because keep in mind, again, it's out of necessity. So a lot of people are making their own cottage industry versions or building one, you know, at their house from spare parts.
Sure. And we can't ignore the fact that it was also happening in Europe. Remember, there were places in Europe that were completely destroyed by the war. They found it out of necessity to build these scooter type designs to get back and forth across factory grounds or, you know, just around the city, whatever. It was kind of a way to get back on wheels again.
Mm-hmm.
And, so in Europe, a lot of post-war Europe countries found it necessary to create something like this as well. So that was happening at the same time simultaneously. And, it became popular out of necessity, but then it also kind of hung around because people really liked the way to get around. It was efficient.
Mm-hmm.
It was cheap to begin with. You know, it was an easy thing to buy and maintain. It was easy to, navigate around the bombed out debris of your town or your factory or whatever it was.
Sure.
But you know, it stuck around because people really genuinely liked it. It was just a good way to get around town.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
remains that way.
Yeah. I was going to say this popularity continues today when I know this is something that's interesting, Scott. I know that when we're talking about scooters, mm-hmm. at least in the U.S. and maybe in Europe too, the first image that's going to spring to most people's mind will be a Vespa.
Yeah, I'm glad you said Vespa because we talked about Vespas in a Car Stuff podcast not long ago.
Right.
We've done a couple of scooter podcasts, as a matter of fact. If you want to just quickly allow me to do this here, we've had about three recently that I can think of. Now, we did the Honda story that I talked about. You know, where we talked about like a small bicycle customizer who eventually worked his way up to motorcycles and, you know, then into cars.
And that's one of my favorite ones we've done recently.
That was a lot of fun. That was a good one. There's a lot of good little tidbits in there that were kind of buried in time. Also, then we did a Vespa scooter podcast, and I think it was in January of 2013, so that was about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but that's that real iconic Italian design. The whole Vespa lifestyle that goes along with that
sure.
thing, right?
Ciao.
And then we also talked about, and I don't know if you remember this, Ben, the Rhino Motors vehicle, which was the single wheel. I guess you can call that a scooter. It's a, I don't know, it's like a powered unicycle.
Yeah, it's that's Rhino RYNO.
RYNO Motors, yeah. And it's electric, you know, a single wheel scooter, I guess. I don't know, but what else we called it during that?
We called it a powered unicycle or something.
Something like that. Anyways, I think, you know what we need to do? I think let's move on to the maxi scooters.
Yeah.
I think maybe the main thing to understand from this whole thing is that maxi scooters are kind of their own class. And the reason that these maxi scooters are being adapted or modded in Japan is because, and I've seen this written somewhere, and I'll have to figure it out where it was. I think it's there's a blog site called Asphalt and Rubber, and I think they said that motorcycles are really, really expensive in Japan.
Right.
And because it's an island nation, and maybe, you know, not the easiest thing to get onto the island. I'm not sure, you know, the importation laws, whatever's going on there. But they said maxi scooters are kind of used to bridge the gap between scooters and motorcycles because a scooter is we know it's low power transportation, but it's somewhere in between 50 cc's and 250 cc engines.
Uh-huh.
And a maxi scooter begins at 250 cc's and ends at 850 cc's. And then, you know, beyond the 850 cc's, that's where you get into like a full motorcycle classification. Now, I know there's smaller motorcycles as well, but this is as far as a scooter can go is 850 cc's.
Mm-hmm.
So maxi scooter is like this, I don't want to say niche because, you know, 250 cc to 850, that's pretty big. So they're more powerful than a standard scooter would be, like a smaller Vespa. I know some Vespas get larger than that, but
right.
These are kind of upper end scooters really that occupy this niche space. And now both are personal transportation. I understand that, but the maxi scooters, they remain, you know, relatively cheap to buy, relatively cheap to, you know, own and operate, and relatively cheap to insure.
Right, yeah, especially in comparison to other vehicles.
Comparison to a motorcycle, which is what the people that do this really want to get to. Now, I know that, you know, some people get into this and say, well, I'm to the point now where I could afford a motorcycle, but I still like these maxi scooters. I'm going to stick with this. But I think that they're really finding a group of people that are such enthusiasts with these maxi scooters, these custom maxi scooters,
yeah,
that they're excited about them. I don't think they're ever going to switch over.
And, you know, right now we're in a bit of a weird spot with an audio podcast because, guys, you got to check out these things. If you liked our earlier episode on Decatur trucks, you're going to enjoy these scooters. This reminded me a little bit of a film that I really enjoyed as a kid called Akira.
Oh.
Do you remember that?
I do not, but I saw that name listed several times.
Okay, yeah. Well, one of the main characters in Akira and some of his buddies ride these just awesome vehicles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's little sci-fi futuristic stuff, but some of these scooters look like they could be in that film.
There is one of these at least one that's a tribute scooter to Akira.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The bright red one.
Uh-huh.
Have you seen that? It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool. Now, I mean, I'm going to tell people to go to search these now, and you can go to that Pink Tentacle site that I mentioned, and if you search custom scooters from Japan, Pink Tentacle, you're going to come up with this amazing group of photographs of these vehicles, and they're from Yamaha, they're from Honda, they're from Suzuki, and you'll see a lot of these repeated, you know, the same models repeated over and over again, but each one is distinctly individual. They're definitely one of a kind pieces here. They're highly customized. And, you know, Rudy had mentioned, I wonder if they have an air suspension, you know, because of the clearance, because some of these look like they're laying on the ground. That's for display. It's just like a car show. You know, when a car pulls into a spot at a car show and they lower it, it lowers itself down, particularly like the rat rods, they'll lower themselves down so they're right on the ground. I mean, sitting on the ground. It looks really cool, but you can't drive that way, obviously.
Right.
So they do raise up and down. I saw a couple of videos with these things where they do raise up and down. Typically, the rider's not on them when they do this. They step to the side, push the button, and it raises up. So it's a kind of a, I think it's a weaker air suspension or possibly hydraulics. If it's hydraulics, it's really, really small system, but I think it's air.
Well, the important part is that you look cool when you're standing next to it, right?
You do look cool. And they have these major groups, these gatherings, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, you can find a lot of these online. I mean, just a simple, you know, keyword search for a big scooter gathering or whatever you wanted to search for. And you're going to find these and you'll see them running and operating. And a lot of them, Ben, they do look like the motorcycles with those, you know, foot and a half wide rear wheels. And, you know, the front wheel's still real narrow, but the back wheel's super wide and
very long vehicles.
Yeah, but you're still, you know, the crazy thing is you're still in the upright position. You know, you're still sitting upright on these things. They still have the floorboard for your feet. They still have the step through designs like the scooters do. So they have all the characteristics of a scooter, but they're also adding in these characteristics of these custom bikes like we see here in the United States and Europe and, you know, Japan, everywhere.
Oh, and, let's see where we're at. Here's where we're at now. We've got a couple of different things. I see you got some pros and cons. We've got some really interesting culture stuff. We have a little bit of stuff about cost maybe, but before we do that, Scott, I have to tell you, there is a reason that I harped on airplane manufacturing in the history of scooters.
And why is that?
And by way of segue, I'd like to mention another film that I enjoy that is not on Netflix Instant, has something to do with our show. It is Godspeed You Black Emperor.
Really?
This is an older black and white documentary about a Japanese bike gang, the Black Emperors. And when we talk about customized scooters, Scott, we would be remiss if we did not mention the subculture attached to both motorcycles and scooters.
That's right. And Rudy did point this out. He mentioned that, you know, he thinks that it was kind of a, I don't know, something like an undesirable nonconformist group, you know, that they thought, these bike gangs were in Japan. And I can understand that. I see it, but there's a strange name for it. They call it the Thundering Tribesmen, or the Japanese word for it is, and this is one I'm going to butcher.
Here we go.
Bosu Zoku.
Yeah. Or, Kaminari Zoku.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. And there's another one. There's, Maruso, which is, I don't know. It's what the police, I guess, call the same thing. So they've got their different words or different names for all these things. Basically, it comes down to like a reckless tribe. And it's kind of the subculture that's associated with custom motorcycles, but now it's kind of, derived over to the maxi scooter culture as well. So, you know, they see them as kind of the same thing, but you know, these guys aren't causing quite as much trouble, I don't think, as the original motorcycle gangs were in Japan.
Right. Yeah. The original motorcycle subculture, was similar in that there was a huge emphasis on customizing your bike.
Yeah. And people were young. They were under 20 typically.
Right.
They were in these groups. So, you know, I can understand the scooter translation to this thing, you know, that it bled over, I guess, to that culture. But yeah, it's applied to, mainly it's applied to the motorcycle culture, you know, that term, I guess.
Which was one of Rudy's questions.
And it's not a new trend. I mean, you know, it's been around since, you know, the 1950s or something like that when they said this kind of all started. Then in the 1980s, 1990s, there were huge amounts of gang members that were involved in these things. I mean, like 42,500 gang members in Japan alone.
Right.
That were in gangs in like 1982, these motorcycle gangs. That's dropped way down. But as of 2010, police have reported that the new trend among these, this group of people, this Bosuzuku, they were supposed to ride together in small groups with scooters instead of motorcycles. So as of 2010, it's kind of trended towards this younger group that are on scooters now instead of on these big, loud motorcycles that they were before.
Right. Yeah. And those motorcycles, of course, were intentionally customized to be much louder. The, one of the things that I think is interesting is I was looking into some different blogs, both by, Japanese nationals and by Western expatriates regarding the scooter culture and what it is. Mm-hmm. And I found some contention. I saw some people who, drove scooters and really enjoyed it. And then I saw other people who said that, scooters were, considered incredibly dangerous, and everybody had a story about someone who had been riding a scooter and then hit by a truck or something. Mm-hmm. And we wondered, you and I have been wondering, how this translates in the modern day. You know, how are scooter riders regarded in Japan?
Ah, you see, we talked about this in the Vespa lifestyle a lot, didn't we?
Right.
Yeah, because, you know, we find that Vespa scooter drivers around town here in Atlanta, they seem to cause a lot of trouble in traffic, really. I mean, just right. to be honest about it, right? I mean,
yeah.
they're on roads that, you know, the speed limits are 45, 50, or even higher sometimes, 55, whatever. No,
sure.
50, I guess, maybe, because they're secondary roads. But, you know, they're the ones going 25 miles per hour and kind of tying things up. And that's not all the time. We had some good things to say about it as well. I think the Vespa podcast will clear a lot of that up, but there are pros and cons to scooter ownership. Is that kind of what you're getting at here?
Because yeah, exactly.
The cons, I mean, if you want to, all right, let's talk about the pros first. How about
okay.
the positives first?
Okay.
All right. So they're relatively inexpensive. I mean, that's a huge one. Kind of cheap to buy, cheap to own, cheap to operate, as we mentioned, cheap to insure as well. They're good for the city. They're good for short trips in town. Commuting, of course, is perfect. Running errands if you don't have to carry a lot of stuff. I mean, some of them have little compartments for, you know, knickknacks and odds and ends and
right,
things like
that. Right, small trip to the grocery store, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to carry your laptop. You're going to carry a purse, something like that. There's room for that, but not really, you know, lots of grocery bags or anything.
Right,
a couple gallons of milk or whatever. You're going to have trouble. Mm-hmm. But low-cost transportation, they get incredible fuel mileage. I mean, you know, we're talking like 100 miles per gallon or more sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what these modified vehicles get, if it's even more, because they're either lighter weight. I can't tell if they're lighter weight or heavier. It's difficult to see because they look like they may even be stretched in some cases.
Some of them are. Yeah, for sure.
Extremely radical designs.
Yeah.
So, two people maximum, that still remains the same, even whether it's custom or not. You know,
right.
That's about max. Three people, you're really, really pushing.
You're not going to see a scooter sidecar.
No, I don't think so.
Or we haven't seen one yet.
No, unless there's some kind of balancing act going on. And there's a question about this one too, parking. Now, it seems like it would be an easy thing to park, an easy thing to store. You could just take it into the hallway in the apartment that you live in and store it there, chain it to a tree out front, something like that.
Sure.
But a lot of places don't allow something like that. Or you could chain it to a bike rack, which would be legal. But other places, that's not allowed, and you have to park it in a regular car spot, and you'd have to pay for that car spot as you would a full car.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've also read about people who say that they come back to find their scooter moved out of the way in a car in that spot. So people have just, you know, decided
picked
that
picked it up and pushed it.
Exactly. They've moved it to the front and then parked in that spot as well. So there's pros and cons about the parking, I guess, in a big city environment.
Well, one big pro, and stop me if you've heard it before, and I think this is probably the pro, is the versatility, especially in very tight, narrow streets in large urban centers like Tokyo.
Definitely. And we, you know, we didn't really touch on that, but I think in the, you know, some of the places that these things are the most popular, they're most popular in Europe, especially in Italy and the Mediterranean area.
Mm-hmm.
Japan and Taiwan are really, really popular centers for scooters as well.
Right.
Not so much in the U.S. And the reason, I guess, is because there's areas that we talked about. They're tighter city environments. They're more, congested, I guess.
Yeah.
The crowded city streets, you know, very, very difficult to get around. Very little space for a larger vehicle. So you're better off to own a smaller vehicle than a car. Cases.
And this goes for urban centers. I'm going to go ahead and say throughout a lot of Southeast Asia as well. We had to be careful when we were prepping for this podcast not to go too far down the rabbit hole, but we'll just let you know if you want to start digging that you can see some amazing scooter customization and fabrication in places like India, Thailand, Vietnam, Indonesia, and more.
Sure, yeah. This Japanese subculture that we're talking about, that just happens to be the one that gets a lot of press, because there's a lot of photos out there and a lot of blog sites have picked up on this, because they are pretty amazing. I mean, again, just do the keyword search and you'll see what we mean.
Right. And also there's a different aim at play, I would argue, in some of these customizations. In the case of a lot of the Japanese customized scooters, these are scooters that are made for show scooters. You know, they're meant to be displayed, taken to, the same thing as the equivalent of a car show and win contest for originality and style.
Yeah, I don't think that the custom scooters that we're talking about, I don't think many of them are daily drivers, just looking at them. I don't think they're the ones that people use to really run around town and do errands in.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the case with some, but I think that the people that do this also have another scooter that's kind of their bread and butter wagon, you know.
There we go.
They get out and they do whatever they have to do, and then, you know, go to work, go to, you know, school, wherever, and then this is their weekend play toy.
Yes. And in contrast, a lot of the scooters that are found in some of the other countries that we just mentioned are functionally customized. So they would be customized, for instance, to carry more stuff than the manufacturer intended.
Exactly. And more people in a lot of
cases. Oh, yes,
sir. We've seen some incredible balancing acts happening. Almost looks like a circus act with as many people as they cram on some of these mopeds and scooters. And so, unusual, very unsafe as well. But, okay, you mentioned contrast. Let's talk about cons. How about
that? Yeah,
right,
nice.
So in contrast to the pros, just a few of these, because there's a lot of pros to owning a scooter, really. I mean,
especially in that environment.
I think climate has a lot to do with it as well. I mean, if you're able to use it year-round, that's a big difference. Because here in Atlanta, I would say out of 365 days, maybe 360 of those days, you know, if you're okay with rain, you'd be able to use that scooter.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I mean, I'm talking about snow and ice, really. If there's like maybe 5 days of that and that's it. And then the rest of the time you could drive that scooter.
Yeah.
So, but if you're in the north or something, you know, here in the States, that scooter use is limited to about 4 months, you know, in the summertime.
Can you imagine someone putting chains on their scooter?
I kind of can after some of the amazing customizations I've seen.
But, oh, yeah.
All right. So some of these cons. Now, long distance travel. Not really good for that. I mean, you can't go too far. You can't, you know what? That ties in with the next one, highway use. You can't really use a scooter on the highway. There's certain CC limits. And I know this gets a little particular because once you get up to the bigger scooters, you are allowed to go into the highway.
Because there's a Venn diagram there.
Yeah, there is. But there's also a thing that you need to worry about is that with scooters, you typically have very, very small wheels, and at high rates of speed, they become very unstable.
That's true. And, let's see. What's next con?
I just mentioned this on our already. I guess rainy days, you know, like severe weather days.
Yeah, inclement weather.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to head out if there's a thunderstorm raging and, you know, there's puddles in the street that are, you know, deeper than the wheels are, really.
Or so, all the roads are iced over.
Exactly. Yeah, there's going to be trouble with that. Carrying supplies, groceries, things like that. If you have to go to work and you have to carry a lot with you, you know, a laptop, a backpack, whatever you happen to have.
Yeah.
That's another thing that's not very good.
Or you just have to, pick up something from a furniture store. Or you're moving.
You know, that's the thing. I have a small hatchback car, and sometimes I'm frustrated with the stuff that I can't carry in that car. You know, I have to go home and get the bigger vehicle, the Honda Element, you know, just so I can bring that home. And even then, that's not even something that's big enough.
Scott, I know you pretty well, man. I bet you have calculated the angles and the measurements, and you know exactly how far it can stick out of the hatch.
I've had some ridiculously large things, you know, jammed into that car, of course, yeah. But, you know, that's the thing. Like, if you head out, let's just say you head out somewhere and you find a really cool vintage poster that you want to get, right?
Okay.
And on the way home, it's like, well, looks like it may start to rain.
You know,
And so I better not buy that right now. I'll come back and get it later in a car or whatever on a sunny day. You come back and it's gone. That's like, I mean, it's a trivial example of something, but that's just one of those things you have to think about if you're going to be out in the elements, if you're exposed like that. You know, there's a lot of things you have to consider with this type of transportation versus an enclosed transportation. And the last thing, I guess, is the two people thing. I mean, you're limited to two people, really.
Yeah.
Maximum. You're really, really pushing it if you try to get that thing to power, you know, anywhere up a hill with three people on board. Mm-hmm. Two is probably really pushing it.
So there's one big con that I'm surprised that we didn't mention on the list yet.
What is that?
Do you want to guess?
I don't even have a guess. I've extinguished my list.
Safety, man.
Safety.
Because this is something that we've dealt with when we do any bike podcast. There is a huge, misconception about bike safety, at least in the United States, for people who aren't riders. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, I guess it's it is some sort of historical legacy that we're left with, but a lot of times when an accident occurs between a bike here in the States and another vehicle, there is a tendency in the public consciousness to blame it on the motorcyclist. But I think in many cases that is just incredibly inaccurate, because what we're looking at when we're looking at a collision, whether in Japan or the U.S., between a car and a bike is someone enclosed in a safety cage, for lack of a better word, hitting someone who has a motor vehicle literally between their legs.
Yeah, I guess there's no protection
under their butt.
And there's no crash testing done of motorcycles or anything like that. And if there is, you know, it's just kind of see what happens, I guess. It's not really like you're going to buy one for its crash, you know, like you would buy a car like for its crash tested safety rating, you know,
right,
5 stars or whatever. It just doesn't happen. I don't really see it happening anytime in the future. I know there's, I think there are airbags for bikes. I think there are things like that happening right now, but it's not really doing anything if you're not strapped onto the vehicle to begin with. And you don't want to be strapped on the vehicle.
No, you don't. It's a death sentence.
You want to be thrown free of the vehicle in a lot of cases, which, you know, that confounds the mind of people that, you know, are in a car, because you want to stay in the car if that's the case in that situation.
Well, that's a good point, because, you know, if you think about it, there's a little bit of a risk there when you're adding up the pros and you're subtracting the cons. You kind of have to play the balance game, because picture this, you're on a tight street in Tokyo, and from what I understand, a lot of streets in Tokyo don't have names, so I'm not going to make them up for the sake of argument. But you're on a really tight street, and you're thinking, oh, this is great. I have the versatility, the agility, and the handling of a scooter, so I'm not stuck back there like that jabroni in his Honda. And you take a turn that's tight, and you know that you can squeeze through, and then boom, a truck comes, didn't see you out of nowhere, because again, you're pretty low to the ground, and you have lost the risk calculation that you made of convenience versus safety. I think, just to be fair, I know this sounds very doom and gloomish of me, but just to be fair, I would much rather have a scooter in Tokyo, despite the risk. Mm-hmm. Would I get injured? Well, Scott, it's me. So yes, probably.
But you have to be sensible. You have to be sensible.
Right.
You have to be defensive when you drive. I mean, there's another whole podcast here about defensive driving. We've done motorcycle podcasts and scooter podcasts about this.
How bikers are usually the safe, bikers and truckers are like the safest people on the road.
Honestly, go back and listen to some of our other podcasts about these other topics where we went into the full detail and more safety detail, because this is just kind of off the top of our heads what we think about this, you know, with this,
right,
these custom scooters and just scooters in general, really. You know what? I got one last thing, really. If you have anything else to include, let me know. But I think I've got one thing that I'd like to kind of wrap this up with.
Okay.
If you don't mind. All right. There's a company that is now creating an electric maxi scooter in Japan.
I read about this.
Yeah. And, I read about it on this, the site, and it's one that Rudy sent along called Asphalt and Rubber.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty cool. They've got a lot of really interesting posts there, you know, a lot of stuff. But one of the posts in particular was about something called, and I guess it's called the Zeeco or Zeeku. It's spelled Z-E-C-O-O. Like the two O's at the end are large case O's. So it's a weird name. I don't know if that, you know, has to do with like zero emissions or something like that, maybe. But, it's an electric maxi scooter, and it has surprisingly low horsepower. It's like 28 horsepower, 47 pound feet of torque. So it's not, you know, really fast. But at the same time, you got to remember that that's about the same as the electric motorcycles that are being put out by that company Brammo and another one called Zero.
Yeah,
so,
Zero, I remember.
So this is and it's really a cool design. I mean, when you look at it, it's definitely stylish. I would not hesitate to ride something that looked that cool.
Oh, yeah?
That's really neat. Very cool design, very aggressive design. Mm-hmm. I think it's something that, you know, people should take a look at. So again, go to the Asphalt and Rubber, look up Zeeco, or it's spelled Z-E-C-O-O. And that's maybe the best way to look at it. There's a lot of photos of this thing, and just tell us if you would ride something like that.
Right. And the last thing I have to add before we go into some listener mail is that according to the sources that we were checking there, There are concentrations of the, how do you say it again? Bosozoku?
Bosozoku.
Thank you, Scott. Sorry, guys. It's the, Aichi, A-I-C-H-I prefecture, also followed by Tokyo, Osaka. Those are the top three concentrations of these. Is it fair to call them gangs? I don't know how much trouble they actually make.
No,
you know?
I mean, I'm sure that there are gangs, you know, in finger quotes.
But I think a lot of these people are just enthusiasts,
yeah,
you know?
People that are excited about customizing because it's a fun thing to do. I mean, even if this is something that you are, you know, just doing because you can't really afford a motorcycle or you can't really make that jump up to a motorcycle right now, or if you can afford a motorcycle and a car or whatever and you just do this out of, you know, because you love it. Because
yeah, labor of love.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just a cool thing. So I encourage all of our listeners to go and look up Japanese custom maxi scooters,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to be blown away by some of these photos. They're just amazing.
And send us pictures of your custom scooter if you have one too.
Oh, yeah. If you happen to have one or you happen to have been somewhere where there are some of these or
yeah.
seen them on the road or something,
yeah.
they're really radically designed wild rides. I really like them.
Now, Scott, at this point, we are going to end the podcast on a little bit of a refutation, aren't we?
I think we are, yeah. So you want to talk about, let's do a little listener mail. All right. So I got a Facebook, post, I guess, sent to me. I don't know how you,
there was, Facebook message?
Yeah, the Facebook message, I guess,
okay.
that I read recently. And it's from, Michael L. And, first of all, he's very complimentary. This is a nice one. I just feel like we need to point this out to Michael. That's all. Okay.
All right.
Michael says, "Hey guys, I wanted you to know that my wife thinks I'm having some kind of bromance with either the two of you or Josh and Chuck from SYSK. I also want to tell you that I love your podcast. I've listened to all of them and have learned a lot. So thank you very much.
Hey, Michael. Thanks, Mike.
We appreciate that. Now, here's the part that I take just a little bit of,
you want to clarify.
Yeah, I guess that's maybe the best way to say it. I want
to
clarify this. So he says, "I wanted to share that I found it odd that you just spent three episodes on Preston Tucker," which he said was very well done, by the way, Ben.
Ah, shucks.
And,
thanks, man.
Yeah, that was nice. But someone like Henry Ford or some of the other greats only get one episode. I found the Tucker episode interesting, but I also found it odd that there's so many other shows that I think could have been two or three podcasts long, but recently,
mm-hmm.
like recently did a two episode string on the MR2 and a three-episode podcast on Tucker. So he's wondering why we haven't really talked about Henry Ford all that much.
Ah, okay. Can I take a swing at this first?
You know what? Go ahead.
Okay. I'll be sort of your hype man on this.
Okay, well, we're being nice, Michael. We really are.
Yeah. And if anything, this is – let our ulterior motives be honest here, Scott. If anything, responding to this letter on air is just another way for us to talk – more about how much we enjoyed the Henry Ford episodes. For anyone who doesn't know, Scott, you are kind of an expert on Henry Ford at this point because we have extensively covered Mr. Ford.
Weird as it is, and it's just happened over like the last 6 years.
Yeah.
Just gradually over the last 6 years. I kind of know a lot about this guy. And we've talked about him so often, and Michael knows that. He's listened to all of our podcasts, so he understands, you know, where it all comes from. But I do want to point out that, you know, we did one episode on Henry Ford that was just strictly on Henry Ford, and it was a relatively short one because it was early on in our history. It was March 2010, so that was 4 years ago.
Oh, man.
And that was kind of like the main focus was Henry Ford, of course, and all his eccentricities and, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, that type
right.
of stuff, right? Well, I wanted to point out that later – I went over to Stuff You Missed in History
mm-hmm.
class, and I did a two-part episode with Sarah Dowdy at the time, who was
right.
hosting the show. And I did a full two-part episode on Henry Ford. Now, a lot of it is repeat stuff, but some of it was new, and it was her angle on things as well.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a mix-up in the information there. So, again, that's two more episodes on just Henry Ford there. Then we've talked about him in, like, Nuts and Bolts Part 5. There was, like, the Spanish moss in the seats. You know,
That's
the thing. Henry Ford comes up. It seems like every other week on this podcast. Really.
Yeah, at least once a month we have a Henry Ford reference because the guy was a mad genius.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about him in the did bank robbers really write fan mail to Henry Ford episode,
right,
of course,
yeah.
you know, about the good getaway cars,
mm-hmm.
the fast getaway cars for Bonnie and Clyde and John Dillinger.
We talked about him in some of our origin stories for other car manufacturers.
Sure, yeah. We talked about the stainless steel cars.
Yeah,
you know, remember those the Fords that came from the Allegheny Ludlum Company, and that
mm-hmm.
was back in June of 2013. We also mentioned him in the Ford Nucleon podcast where the nuclear power cars.
Right.
And that was in June of 2011.
And we mentioned him as well in, let's see, we're laundry listing. We mentioned him numerous times throughout the show, almost whenever we talk about a certain type of vehicle, like a hearse or an ambulance.
Also, we mentioned him in the Ford GT40 story, which now he wasn't around at that time, but
the company,
company, and he was part of that early on. Well, anyways, you got to listen to that one. That was in November of 2010. And we even mentioned him in the Tucker podcast. So,
right.
You know, the point is, Michael, and I'm not trying to, be a jerk about this, but I hope it's not coming off that way, because I'm really not.
You're fine.
I just want to say that, it seems like every other week we have at least, we spend a minute or two talking about Henry Ford during some other podcast, and I feel like we cover Henry Ford all the time. He's a fascinating guy.
Well, I think it's a good question from Michael's end, because he's rightly pointing out, we did our first three-part episode ever. I'd like to do more of those, because we went deep down the rabbit hole there. But also, it could be a little bit confusing for listeners who wonder, Scott, Ben, you guys mention Henry Ford all the time, but you did one podcast just on him. And the reason that we don't have a big two-part podcast on that is because we already sent you as our representative to Stuff You Missed in History Class to do, by the way, an excellent two-part podcast on Henry Ford. And
thank you, Ben.
Oh, thank you, man. It'd be awkward if I thought it was bad.
It's a real dog.
Yeah, if I was like, hey, good for you for getting out there.
You sure tried.
No, but it's a fantastic two-part episode that follows all of the interesting, fascinating stories and myths about Henry Ford.
And other characters come up along the way that we do things like this with as well. So Preston Tucker will probably come up in other things.
Sure.
I think we talked about Preston Tucker in other podcasts as well,
mm-hmm.
With some of his innovative designs. And I know that once we kind of get that knowledge, once we've studied these so that we get, a full, complete history, understanding of the history, rather, mm-hmm. then we bring that up later in other podcasts, and it just kind of builds on each other. So hopefully, throughout the years, you'll find like we're cross-referencing other episodes and information that we dug up, even years ago that we just somehow, it kind of sparks a memory, and we end up adding that to the current podcast. So I don't know. In my defense, I guess, or in our defense, I'm saying that, this is kind of a continuous project, really.
Yeah.
And we're talking about some of these main characters that are really strange, really eccentric, really unusual. And I know he just mentioned Henry Ford as just an example. So we kind of jumped off on a tangent that, that was it. But I see what he's saying that, maybe we should dig a little deeper on some of these people and do two or three part episodes even.
That's what I'm thinking.
Because really when you start digging into someone's biography and, exactly what they're all about, fascinating, fascinating people.
Well, Michael, thank you for writing to us. You have inspired us to do more multi-part episodes. And we really appreciate you giving us a chance to talk more about Henry Ford. Oh, man, that town in Brazil.
Fordlandia.
Yeah. Oh, still, that's one of my favorite stories. He ripped a car apart with his bare hands.
Yeah, he's a tough guy.
Yeah, I'm going crazy on this one. So before I go full rabbit hole mode, we just want to say, Michael, thank you for writing to us. We hope that your wife is not sick of the show, but we'd like to give you a shout out yet again. We very much appreciate it. And Scott, I guess it's time for us to hop on our figurative custom scooters and get out of here.
Continue the bromance.
So you can get updates on everything automotive if you go to carstuffshow.com, which is our own website. I still can't believe we have our own new website.
Yeah, it's pretty legit, too. I mean, it looks good.
You can also check out our Facebook and Twitter sites, and you can write to us directly. Our email address is
carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.